I really just want somebody who's going to aggressively fight for me in court. Is that too much to ask?
Filing an eviction should not be complicated. There's got to be an easier way.
Nothing frustrates me more than having to wait for my attorney to call me back. I need them now.
What I really need from my law firm is someone who can provide my staff training so we actually can stay out of trouble.
When you have property management problems, we have your solutions. This is the Zona Law Group podcast with the experienced attorneys from Zona Law.
Well, welcome today to the Zona Law Group podcast. I'm David Pickron, your host, and here with me today is Scott Balua, one of the attorneys here at Zona Law Group. Scott, how are you doing today?
Doing very well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here and really talk today about the mother of all ships, the Arizona Landlord-Tenant Act. And before we get into really talking about that, I want to learn a little bit more kind of about you, where you've come from, what you like, what you like about landlord-tenant.
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity to talk not only about the act, but give a little introduction about myself as well. I've been an attorney for about 7 years or so. I did collections work for a few years and before I started working at the Zona Law Group. Most of the work that I do involves a lot of interaction with people, going to court a lot, helping out property managers with any problems that they have. And I just love the work that I do.
Well, I think that there's just a lot of good people out there and on both sides, right? I mean, you represent the manager or the property management company, but I mean, there's just good people that are having some struggles and you just need sometimes take a person in the middle and just try to make the best out of a bad situation.
Absolutely. One of the tasks that we have as an attorney is to make sure that when we're talking to opposing parties, you know, people that end up coming to court, you know, that we're treating them in the best possible way that we can. We have a conversation with them. We let them know that we're listening to whatever their concerns are. We need to find out if there's some legitimate issue going on or whether or not it's just simply an issue of non-payment of rent or not complying with the lease agreement or some other issue.
Right.
And I have to say that the majority of the people that I do end up meeting, you know, they've had a difficult situation pop up. They've had something happen in their lives that's probably not their fault. So making them feel listened to and so that they feel more comfortable with the process is actually a big part of what we do.
I love that because sometimes, you know, we get a bad rap out there. We get demonized that we're just throwing everybody out. And, you know, our job is just to, you know, be mean. And in fact, it's just the opposite. Our clients want to keep as many paying, you know, occupants as possible, right? I mean, if we could make it work and turn somebody around and get them back on track, our clients want that. We want that. Everybody wants a healthy relationship.
I can't recall any circumstance in which a property manager would come to me and say, like, well, I just want this person out. That right. doesn't happen. It's we want to build a good, positive relationship with the community. We want to build a right. good, positive relationship with the individual tenants right. that they have at the right. property. That's what the goal ultimately is.
And I mean, I don't want to get this wrong, but I mean, there are times when we have to get tough. I mean, there are times when just people aren't cooperating and it's a really tough situation. So I don't want to say that, you know, we're nice when we have to be nice, but there are times where, you know, sometimes you need to get a little bit tough, but that's rare.
Right. And the formula that I always use is that if there's 10 people that I'll end up having an interaction with about what's going on with their landlord, one out of the 10 times, maybe, you know, there's going to be a difficulty because the person wants to fight just for the purpose of fighting. And then in that circumstance, well, then that's why we have the judge there. That's why we go in front of the judge. We lay out the law. We lay out the lease provisions. Right. We explain exactly what's going on. And then the problem gets resolved that way.
And I think that's a good segue into talking about the Arizona Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, because we refer back to not only the lease, but also the Arizona statute. And those are really the two things I think you rely on in court.
Absolutely. And before you even get to the lease, you have to build a solid foundation with the act itself. There are several different provisions that tell landlords what you can and what you cannot put into the lease agreement or what type of agreements you can enter into. And if you're a landlord, one of the things you want to do is to refer first to the act before even creating your lease.
Right, perfect, because that is the end-all, no changing, very simple. Now, how well should, if you're getting into this business, how well should you know that act?
you should have a very good familiarity with it, mostly because if you're not walking step through all the different provisions in there and you miss something and you put something in your lease, there's a possibility you're voiding your lease. There's a possibility that you're not going to be able to enforce the lease the way that you want to. And having an expectation between the parties about what kind of relationship you're entering into with the tenant is very important if you're running a business and also trying to provide housing for people.
And if you're listening to this podcast or watching it, you can go to www.zona.law under the resource tab, and you can get a link to the Arizona Residential Landlord Act if you need to go ahead and get a copy. It's really good, especially if you're new in this industry, to read through it and kind of understand. And then if you have any questions, you can ask, you know, maybe your supervisors or call your attorney.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of helpful resources there, starting with the Act as well as any of the additional information that you need there. It's a wonderful resource.
Perfect. Well, we're not going to have time to go through the whole Act. I mean, it's sure. It's kind of thick today, but I do want to cover maybe a few things about the Act that just kind of maybe gives our client a little idea of kind of what's in it and why they need to know it. And the first is, what does the Act say about security deposits?
That's actually one of the most frequent questions that I end up getting is okay. The new landlords that are just coming into the business, they need to know, because every state's a little bit different. And some of landlords have operated in other states that have different requirements. In Arizona, a security deposit cannot be more than 1.5 times the month's rent. So if the rent is $1,000, you can't charge more than $1,500 for the security deposit. And those funds need to be held in trust so that at the time of the move out, they can properly be allocated.
Okay. And a lot of landlords get in trouble because the smaller ones, I should at least say, because they spend that security deposit. You say held in trust means that's not your money. That just needs to be held and be ready to be returned.
Correct. Okay. You don't want to end up spending money that you're not legally entitled to. That money isn't yours. It's money that you're holding so that if anything does happen with the property, that you could subtract whatever damages you incurred from that money.
Now, some states have it where you have to show the bank account and the account number to the applicant or to the tenant, the resident. Do we have anything like that in our Act here?
There's nothing that requires that here in Arizona. You can simply just withhold or hold back that security deposit. Okay. And then once the tenant has moved out or returned possession in some other way to the landlord, then you go through the disposition process, which is sometimes the source of a lot of litigation, as well as a lot of questions that come up from property managers.
And let's say I do ask for more than 1.5 times security deposit. What is the violation? What happens?
Well, technically what happens is that because you've now asked for more, then the lease could be void. And if you have a relationship between you and the tenant and you voided the lease agreement that's the foundation of the relationship, you are now potentially going to be liable for that.
Okay, perfect. Where else I see a lot of, our housing providers make mistakes is in notices, right? In serving the 5 days, the 10 days, the 30 days, the immediates, the abandonments. I mean, there's so many different type of notices, and a lot of the Act talk about different situations.
Correct. And it's a lot of one of the biggest misconceptions that I see in the questions that I get repeatedly is that what does hand delivery mean? And one person might have one interpretation. Another person might have a different interpretation.
The delivery of the notice.
Correct. Okay. And so regardless if it's a 5-day notice for failure to pay rent or for a health and safety violation, 10-day notice for not complying with the lease terms, you need to make sure that the notice is either hand-delivered or certified mail. The problem that you have with hand delivery is that you actually have to put it into the hand of the person. And sometimes the small landlords, they don't understand that.
They think
that
it's their hand to the door.
Correct. Exactly. And that happens. And if that is what happens and it wasn't put into the person's hand, then your case, if you have to move forward with an eviction, is going to get dismissed because that's a statutory requirement. And what we always advise is take the conservative approach. The conservative approach, spend the $4, spend the $4.50, send it via certified mail. In the alternative, if you're going to hand deliver it, make sure you bring a witness with you or make sure that you have some other verification that the notice is actually being delivered.
Awesome. Or hire a professional company and just make it super easy on yourself.
Absolutely. Process servers provided.
Probably $20-$25. You can just have it completely done and you know that it's done right.
Because even if there's like a hand delivery circumstance, then it's a factual issue that would need to be resolved by a judge But if you send it via certified mail or you use a process server who's going to submit an affidavit of service, right, then that's going to be a much better way to process your notices.
Now, it's important to know in the Act, we never can just go right to court, right to an eviction. You always have to have this step prior, which is the notice step. The notice step allows the resident to kind of cure something before you actually file on them, right? So what are the kind of, we don't want to get into some details on this, but give me just general, what are the most common type of notices there are?
I mean, the number one most common is the five-day failure to pay rent.
Okay.
Send out a five-day notice. The tenant in that circumstance has two choices. They can either pay the amounts that are being demanded on the five-day notice, or they have to vacate the property. If they don't vacate the property, that's when the actual court proceedings and the process of an eviction starts.
Okay. And give me some other notices then.
So the other notices that you would have is a five-day health and safety. Let's say that the tenant is engaging in some sort of dangerous activity at the property or that is potentially a threat to the property or to neighbors. Then you would end up serving a five-day health and safety. The same thing applies. You have to either do it through hand delivery or through certified mail. Sometimes it could be simple noncompliances. If it's your obligation to mow the lawn, if you have a single family home and it's not being mowed and there's HOA violations that are popping up, then you would serve a 10-day noncompliance notice. And all of those three notices are curable, but the one that isn't curable is the immediate termination. The immediate termination specifically refers to an act that cannot be cured, something that is usually criminal in nature.
Okay, perfect. So just know that we really need to get these notices. So if you read the Landlord Residential Tenant Act, I mean, if you're going to skip any part, don't skip the notice part. It's so important. It's how you actually really control your relationship with your residents.
When we're at court, the majority of the self-represented landlords will usually go right after the attorneys go for the court procedure. And one of the most common things that I see is that a case automatically gets dismissed because the notice wasn't properly served. It wasn't the correct notice. It didn't have the appropriate language in it. So you're 100% right. Notice is absolutely is vital.
A lot of trouble. Now, we're also required in the Act to kind of provide a safe environment, right? I mean, we've got to make sure that we're just not slumlords.
Absolutely.
Right? And so let's talk a little bit, what does the Act say we have to provide as housing providers?
Well, you can't have holes in your wall. You can't provide us a situation that presents a health and safety risk to the people that are living inside of it. Anything that if the landlord's been put on notice that there's mold in the property, that there's leaks in the roof, that there's some other health and safety, that's the bottom line. If there's anything that's going to affect the health and safety of the people that are living in there, then that is the obligation of the landlord to fix and to correct and make sure that it's habitable for the people living inside.
I see that happen a lot with air conditioning units here where we're in Arizona, you know, right. It's 106, 110. Every AC repairman's so busy, he's, you know, pulling 24-hour shifts. We're as landlords trying to get these people over there and get them fixed, but sometimes it takes a little bit of time and,
But if it's 120 degrees out and you're already at 85, 90 and you don't have air conditioning, then you want it fixed sooner rather
Absolutely.
Than later. Under the Act, the landlord has 5 days. In my experience, most of the experienced landlords will get out there much sooner than that. It might be a day or two, but it's rare that they ever take longer than that because they know how important it is to provide that service in Arizona.
Well, Scott, that Arizona... You know, it's always like a long name for me, the Arizona Residential Landlord Tenant Act. It's so important for landlords to know. I can't stress it enough. Once again, you can find a copy of that at www.zona.law under the resource tab. It's been great having you today to talk about, you know, just kind of a really high brush overview of this act. And we could, you know, could spend all day getting into specifics, right? But we've covered some of those and just kind of gives you an idea of what it says. Do you have anything else to add that maybe we didn't cover today?
No, I think that those are the three biggest areas that we have to address, especially when you're starting that lease process or you're starting that relationship with a tenant. Understanding the security deposits, understanding the notices, and your obligation as a landlord to provide a habitable space for the person to live in, and understanding that the Act is the foundation for all of that is important.
Well, I couldn't wrap that up any better. Thank you so much, Scott. It's good to be on this podcast with you today. like I said before, let's just be diligent, be great managers and assistant managers and leasing agents. Let's know what we can do and what we can't do. Let's stay out of trouble. We don't want to call these guys, okay? We want to take care of it. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for having me.